Car keys. BBC News.
When I started at art college, that idea of revolution and change and rebellion was almost the DNA of art.
Welcome to the uprising.
Along comes the young artist, a little bit angry, shakes his fist at the establishment and goes, I am going to show you what fantastic innovation I have here. And the art world looks down and goes, oh yeah, nice rebellion. Welcome in.
The Wreath Lectures with Grace and Perry continue this Tuesday morning at 9. Catch up with the series so far on the BBC Radio 4 website.
Now our classic serial. Paul Reddy and Lydia Leonard star in Evelyn Waugh's satirical World War II masterpiece Sword of Honour. Episode 5, Unconditional Surrender.
The battle for Crete had failed. With a slim chance of survival, Captain Crouchback and Corporal Major Ludovic boarded a small boat with a ragtag of wounded, exhausted, and delirious men. As the boat sailed out of the picture, Guy's last thoughts were of his remaining men, waiting at their posts to be taken prisoner. They were at sea for days, but at night, hope died. When the fuel gave out, they hoisted the sail. Sometimes it hung slack, sometimes it filled to the breeze, while men sprawled, comatose, muttering, snoring.
I know what you're up to, Ludovic. Lie down, man.
A sapper who had been brisk and busy now pointed a frantic finger at Corporal Major Ludovic.
You thought I was asleep, but I heard you. I heard everything.
Oh, do be quiet, then.
Understand this. If I go, you go with me.
Whatever you say.
Later that day, or was it the next day, or the day after that, the sapper moved to a place next to Guy.
When your pistol?
Why?
I threw mine away before I found this boat. I'm the skipper here, so I'm the only man entitled to arms.
Oh, nonsense.
Are you in this too?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I heard him while he was asleep. I know his plan.
Whose plan?
Ludovic's. I must have your pistol. Please.
Why?
If you fall asleep again, he'll get hold of it. I'm the only man who can stay awake. I've got to stay awake. If I go to sleep, he's got us all. Please, I must have the pistol. You fool!
It's the best place for it.
You bloody fool. He's got us now.
Just lie down and keep quiet before you make yourself ill.
So it's me then. All alone. One against the lot of you. Get off me. Bastard insects.
Well, I didn't think you got bugs at sea.
Clearly. No one told this lot.
Where's the sapper?
Gone.
Gone where?
Gone.
The bugs were real enough, but what of the whales and the fog that engulfed them, then vanished as swiftly as it came? Guy cogitated these dubious episodes from his hospital bed, dazed with morphia, irrigated through a rubber tube into a vein.
The green disc remains on the body.
How's he eating, sister?
Only fair, Colonel Tickridge.
That's no good.
The Colonel's right, Captain Crouchback. You must try to eat.
Come on, man. Time to snap out of it.
You need to feed yourself up.
Crouchback, I have to tell you, your temporary appointment ceased on the day of capitulation. That's from the first of this month you revert to lieutenant. Do you understand? While you're lying there, you're losing money.
He just won't make the effort.
Do you think he's gone mad?
He may have to be moved to an observation ward.
Mad or sane, Guy offered no scope for an observer, and when release finally came, it was not through official channels.
C'è scappato il capitano?
No, capitano, oggi, signora. Tenente.
Oh. That's more like the old guy.
Oh, how lovely to see you, Julia.
Wearing linen and a Mexican sombrero, Julia Stitch sat on Guy's bed, a radiant contrast to the starched and hooded nurses.
I've just been talking to Tommy Blackhouse.
Oh, Tommy's here?
Along the passage with his legs strung up to the roof.
I'd love to see him.
Oh, that was an awful business in Crete.
Yes, Tommy was lucky to be out of it.
At least you're all right, and Ivor.
Ivor got out? In a boat like me?
Not quite like you, more comfortable.
Trust Ivor. Oh, but that's lovely, really delightful.
I think so, but I'm always on Ivor's side.
Make him come and see me.
He's in India.
Why?
He was sent for. The Viceroy is a sort of cousin. He claimed him.
I can't imagine Ivor being made to do anything he didn't want to.
Oh, I think he wanted to, all right. After all, it's about the only place left where there's plenty of horses.
Did any of Hook Force get away? And what about Ten Commander?
I don't think so. It is lovely seeing you so well, Guy.
You know, I don't quite understand. What was Ivor doing? I was with him that last evening in Crete. We had a gloomy talk about the surrender. I don't know what happened after that.
I imagine it was all pretty chaotic over there.
Utterly.
And by the end, I suppose there weren't any orders.
Oh, there were orders, all right.
You're sure?
Quite sure.
I'd better tell you that there are a lot of beastly people about, and they aren't being awfully nice about Ivor.
In what way?
Do you recall anything in the orders that gave the impression that Ivor was to stay behind to be taken prisoner?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I've got them written down. They should be in my locker. What happened, Julia?
There was an order from the beach for Hook Force to embark immediately. Ivor was sent down to verify it, and a naval officer told him that his ship was just leaving at another staying for Hook Force. Until Ivor reached Alexandria, he thought the rest of Hook Force was in the other cruiser, and when he found out it wasn't, well, he was in rather a jam.
Uh-huh. Is that his story?
It's our story.
Why did he run off to India?
That was my idea. What are you going to do with those notes of yours?
I suppose someone will want to see them.
Not Tommy.
I'm sorry it's not whiskey. Tea will have to do. Damn good to see you, Guy.
You too, Tommy.
They ought to recommend you for an MC or something.
Oh.
The trouble is, Crete wasn't all that successful, and they prefer handing out decorations after a victory.
I'm just glad to be alive.
Were you in charge of the boat party?
No. There was a sapper who got it going and did everything till he started to lose his marbles. Oh. Then one morning I woke up and he was gone.
Overboard?
Presumably in the night while everyone slept. After that, we more or less drifted, I think.
What became of Brigade Major Hound?
Another mysterious disappearance. Ludovic's the only man who can tell you that.
I gather he turned out rather well.
Did he?
First class. He carried you ashore at Sidi Barani.
Really? I had no idea.
Must be as strong as a horse. He was only in hospital for 2 days. I've put him in for a commission. The nurses told me you were off your head.
I was, but I'm all right now. Julia Stitch called this morning. She told me about Ivor.
Ah, yes. Pity he had to go off so soon.
Did he tell you much about his escape?
One version.
You didn't believe it?
Oh, come on, Guy, what do you take me for? No one believes it, least of all Julia.
What will you do?
Nothing to do with me, thank God. Ivor's put up a pretty poor show, and Julia put in a lot of hard work to get him out of the way. But that's the Stitch service.
She told me Ivor's cousin had sent for him.
Best for all concerned to keep quiet and forget the whole business.
What if other parties don't forget it?
Well, then Ivor may face a court-martial for desertion in the face of the enemy. They shot people for that in the last war. Julia tells me she's having you transferred to her place to recuperate.
Yes.
You'll be in clover up there.
In an act of symbolism, Guy took his notebook to the incinerator and thrust it in. That afternoon, he was transported by ambulance to Mrs. Stitch's. Days passed while he lay in a chaise longue beside the strutting, preening peacocks. Guests came and went, diplomats, politicians, generals and admirals, and one evening, on Guy's request, Colonel Tickeridge of the Halberdiers.
I hear Churchill's welcoming Stalin as our new ally.
What else can he do?
What have you two been talking about?
Winston, and I've been arranging my future with the Colonel.
Satisfactorily?
Very.
The Halberdiers lost a lot of good fellows in Crete, and we're busy reforming at the moment. Glad to have one of the old lot back again. Only hope the Brigadier won't snap him up for Hook Force.
Richie Hook? Isn't he dead?
He was lost.
But not forgotten.
He turned up in Western Abyssinia, leading a group of natives. Wanted to go on with them, of course, but the powers that be wouldn't stand for it, so they winkled him out and got him to Khartoum. He's due in Cairo this week.
2 days later, Guy and Julia sat in the sunlight enjoying breakfast when the peace of the early morning was broken by a military dispatch rider delivering a letter.
Oh, no.
Something wrong?
They're sending me home. I was due for a medical at the end of the week. They would have passed me fit to join the battalion.
Don't you want to go home?
Of course not.
Everybody else seems to.
I'll appeal. See if I can change their minds.
If you think it's worth your while.
Julia,
hmm?
If they prove intractable, do you think you can fix things for me?
Oh, no, Guy. I never interfere with the military. Algy wouldn't like it at all.
Guy joined a second battalion, with whom he trained and periodically moved quarters from Scotland to Cornwall. He was one of the great unwanted. Hopes dashed, ambition thwarted, there followed 2 blank years. In August 1943, he felt the crushing blow of advancing age.
2 hours ago, Italy declared war on Germany. A proclamation by Marshal Badoglio brands the Germans as savages.
Surplus to requirements, Guy took some leave and visited his father, still residing at the Marine Hotel, Matchett.
Here, Felix. Come on, boy. Go on, Guy. He wants you to throw his stick. There you are. What on earth's the matter?
Just thinking about the mess in Italy.
It wasn't good for you. Living abroad, all alone.
I wasn't particularly thinking about myself.
The war.
And the church. What a mistake the Lateran Treaty was. It seems so masterly 15 years ago. 15 years. Well, what's 15 years in the history of Rome? It would have been so much better if the Pope had sat it out. Then after this is all over, he could have re-emerged saying, what was all that about? Mussolini? Just a hooligan from out of town causing a disturbance.
My dear boy, that isn't what the church is like. It isn't what she's for. I suppose it's reasonable for a soldier to rejoice in victory.
I'm not interested in victory anymore.
Then you've no business being a soldier.
I want to stay in the war. I'd like to do some fighting, but it doesn't seem to matter now who wins.
Well, that sort of question isn't for soldiers. I'm becoming the schoolmaster, forgive me. We mustn't quarrel. I used often to get angry with your poor brother Ivo, and with Angela. Oh, she was a rather tiresome girl the year she came out. But I don't think I've ever been angry with you. Shall we go back to the hotel? See if Mrs. Cuthbert can forage some tea.
A few days later, Guy received a letter from his father, who, on reflection, felt he'd said too much or too little, and now wanted to say more.
My dear Guy, I haven't been happy about our conversation on your last visit. When you spoke of the Lateran Treaty, did you consider how many souls have been reconciled
and have died at peace as a result of it? How many children have been brought up in the faith who might have lived in ignorance? Quantitative judgments don't apply. If one soul was saved, that is full compensation for any amount of loss of faith. I write like this because I am worried about you, and I gather I may not live very much longer.
Oh, no.
I saw the doctor yesterday, and he seemed to think I have something pretty bad the matter with me.
Come in.
Fancy a beer, Crouchback?
Hmm? Oh, yes, thanks. I'll join you shortly.
Righto.
I know you're cut up at being left behind in England, but you mustn't sulk. Have you thought about what you will do after the war? There's the house at Broome, the villagers call Little Hall. You'll have to live somewhere, and I doubt you'll want to go back to Italy, even if the Castello survives the bombing. You see, I'm thinking a lot about death at the moment. Well, that's quite suitable at my age and condition. Ever your affectionate father, G. Crouchback.
Hello, Tommy.
Guy, good to see you back in the land of the living.
How's the leg?
Well, tip-top, thanks. They've given me a brigade of commandos, so they must think I'm up to it. You?
Back with the halberdiers. Presently unemployed. Mm,
bad timing. Mm. We're off to Italy any day. I could have done with having you along.
Too late now, I suppose.
Far too late, I'm afraid. Sorry.
I suppose something will crop up. The fellow at the War Office has been very civil.
Word to the wise, he'll probably get impatient soon. There's a general flap about manpower, so watch out or they'll pitch you into something awful.
Thanks for the warning.
Oh, look here. There is something that might do as a stopgap.
Yes?
I keep a liaison officer at Hazardous Offensive Operations HQ. Well, God knows what he does. Anyway, I'm taking him with me. But there are a few oddbods at WHO who've got attached to me. You could liaise with them for a bit if you like.
In the autumn of 1943, Hazardous Offensive Operations Headquarters was a very different organization from the modest offices Guy had visited in the winter of 1940. It now resided in the Venetian Gothic brick edifice of the Royal Victorian Institute, a museum nobly planned but little frequented.
I'll see what I can do, General, but I'm not making any promises. Yes?
Captain Crouchback, Colonel Blackhouse's new liaison officer.
I can't leave the telephone.
If you could just direct me to my office.
Through the door, turn left. One moment, please, caller. Up the stairs to the third floor, fourth door on the right.
Thank you.
Hello, OHQ.
Hazardous Offensive Operations employed small bands of experts and eccentrics, all left in untroubled privacy to research fortifying drugs, invisible maps, and other projects close to the heart of the healthy schoolboy. It was even rumoured that a Swahili witch doctor had been engaged to cast spells on the Nazi leaders.
Third floor. Fourth door on the right.
Don't move!
Sorry.
3, 2, 1! No. Still too loud, Harry. We need to work on the casing.
Right here.
Sorry, who are you?
Crouchback, the new liaison officer.
Your office is across the corridor.
Right, thanks. Sorry, may I ask what you do?
Harry and I are trying to come up with a noiseless explosive. All very hush-hush.
Right.
Hush-hush! Get it?
Yes, very good. I'll let you get on.
Kirsty, how lovely to see you.
Captain Crouchback, do you know Lieutenant Padfield?
Call me Loot. Everyone else does.
Didn't we meet at my Uncle Peregrine's when you were first over here?
That's right. Good to see you again, sir.
We've been to Westminster Abbey to see the Sword of Stalingrad.
Yeah, I think it's a lovely gesture of your king's to present it to Uncle Joe, but there's a feature no one could explain to me.
What's that?
Well, the escutcheon on the scabbard will be upside down when worn on a baldric.
I don't suppose Stalin will wear it on a baldric.
Well, maybe not, but I'm surprised at your College of Arms passing it.
Lute knows much more about our heritage than I do. Ian told me you had a hellish time in Crete.
It was a bit of a mess. Where is Ian now?
Still running the press service at WHO HQ. Oh,
I've just come from there. Tommy Blackhouse fixed me up with a temporary job.
Oh, good. I'll tell Ian to chivvy you out.
Well, I was at your old family seat yesterday.
Broome? What on earth took you there?
Well, now it's a school. Sally Sackville Strutt has a daughter there, and we went to see her play hockey. Well, she's captain to Crouchback. You knew the school had been divided into two houses, Crouchback and the Holy Family?
The invidious distinction has been remarked on.
Well, Crouchback won, you'll be glad to hear.
Do you see anything of Virginia?
Not as much as I used to.
Would that be Virginia Troy?
She used to be Virginia Crouchback.
Oh.
It was a long time ago, or at least it seems it.
I suppose that's what war does.
Well, we better be going. I'll tell Ian to bring you to supper.
Oh, I'd like that.
Be seeing you.
Guy shared his office with a plaster reconstruction of a megalosaurus. It was his 40th birthday. There was no one at WHO HQ with whom to share this landmark, so, with nothing better to occupy his time, Guy paid a visit on the civilian efficiency expert, a plump, taciturn little man called Oates.
Come in.
Crouchback, suppose this is about your request for a typist.
Any joy?
Negative.
Oh. But Ian Kilbannock has three.
Kilbannock runs the press service and he's down to one. I've just withdrawn two of them. There is another, but her work seems mainly extramural.
Couldn't I have her?
Mrs. Troy's position is somewhat anomalous.
Troy?
In fact, I shall raise the subject at the next manpower conference.
Guy decided not to challenge Mr. Oates' decision about his former wife. He couldn't imagine Virginia working for him. Instead, he turned his attention to the new and elaborate machine, humming, clicking and whirring in the corner.
What have you got there?
Ah, you've found my tender spot. You might call it my pet. It's just been flown in from America. Took 560 man-hours to install. There isn't another like it in the country.
Oh, but what is it?
An electronic personnel selector.
Have we got any electronic personnel?
Eh?
Never mind.
It covers every contingency.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. For instance, suppose I want to find a lieutenant colonel who's, I don't know, a long-distance swimmer, qualified as a barrister, with experience of catering in tropical countries.
Right.
Previously, I'd have to go through all the records, but now I just press these buttons. Oh, right. Swimmer, barrister, catering, tropical countries. Go on, take the card out of the slot.
Oh. It's completely blank.
That means negative.
From the man you described, I think I could have guessed that.
Obviously, I was illustrating an extreme example. Oh, hold on. This one here is a genuine inquiry.
Oh,
And off we go.
What was the request?
Officer for special employment, under 40, with university degree, who's lived in Italy and had commando training.
Ooh, a result.
Let's see. Well, well. Now, that is a remarkable coincidence.
Hmm.
It's come up with you.
Has it?
I'll send your name in at once.
Guy didn't wish to correct the machine on the question of his age or of the extent of his commando training. He'd been given a birthday present. The first for how many years? The lightness of heart Guy felt at that moment was not shared by Ian and Kirsty Kilbannock.
Ian, Could you take all those papers and put them in your desk?
Is this all because Virginia's coming over?
I do tidy up when we're not expecting guests. Well, you probably think elves come and do it in the night.
The Kilbannocks' house in Eaton Terrace had suffered no direct damage from bombing. 4 years had left their mark on the once gay interior, but despite appearances, they had in fact recovered from the comparative penury of 1939.
Right. Enough. Well, you better go out to Bellamy's or somewhere. I gather on the telephone that Virginia wants a heart-to-heart.
Trimmer?
Well, I suppose so. Holy moons around her like a love-struck youth.
Ian Kilbannock had been tasked with publicising Captain Trimmer, the handsome hero, to help raise morale amongst the masses.
Well, the man's so clingy, it gives me the creeps.
In order to keep Trimmer happy, Ian had persuaded Virginia to be nice to him.
I'm thinking of shipping him to America.
It'd be much the best thing.
Well, we've done pretty much all we can with him in this country. We've finished the film, and the BBC don't want to renew his Voice of Trimmer talks.
I should think not.
They seemed such a good idea at the time. Just didn't catch on.
Oh, do you think the Americans will swallow him?
Well, he'll be something new, and they're sick of fighter pilots. Speaking of Americans, you went to see The Sword of Stalingrad with Lute, didn't you?
Yes. Why?
When we were filming Trimmer's big landing on the beaches scene, I gave him a commando dagger to brandish. They were never used in action, mostly given away to tarts. Anyway, the king saw the film, spotted the dagger, and had one sent round. The royal mind brooded a bit, and the result is that thing that everyone's queuing to see in the Abbey. Inadvertently, the Sword of Stalingrad is Trimmer's idea.
What an odd little footnote of history.
Isn't it just?
Virginia!
Oh, marvellous.
Oh, I thought you were sending this one out.
I am.
Mrs. Troy, do I have to remind you that I am your superior officer?
Oh, God, how that joke bores me.
Run along, Ian. There's a good boy. We've got things to talk about.
I might look in at Everard's Bruce's party. Oh, you've brought luggage, Ginny.
Yeah, can I stay for a bit, Kirsty?
Yes. For a bit.
Until Trimmer's out of the country. He says he's had a warning order to stand by for a trip. Somewhere he can't take me, thank God.
I always hoped you might come to like him.
But I've endured 2 years. My 2 years of him singing night and day at me. Oh.
Yes, you've been jolly good. You deserve a holiday. Ugh. Right, I'll leave you two. Don't wait up.
If you want a drink, we'll have to go out. There's nothing in the house except coffee.
Oh, coffee's fine.
Guy strode down St. James Street full of hope. He had not felt such exhilaration since his first days in the Halberdiers, or his first minutes on enemy soil. The card that had popped out of the electronic personnel selector was like a fortune from a seaside slot machine. There was still a place for him outside the futile routine of Hazardous Offensive Operations HQ.
Hello, Guy.
Arthur.
How go the Halberdiers?
Well, Guy's brother-in-law had slipped away from the House of Commons in need of a breather. Arthur Box Bender could rely on Bellamy's to provide decent company.
Everything's going merrily on the Eastern Front.
Merrily?
It'll be on the 9 o'clock news. Mm. Uncle Joe's fairly got them on the run, and I tell you, I shouldn't much care to be one of his prisoners.
Have you heard from Tony?
Well, the Germans censor the letters, but it sounds as though POWs are reasonably well looked after. Mm. Trouble is, he's got a tomfool idea about being a monk. He'll snap out of it, I'm sure, as soon as he gets back to normal life, but it is worrying.
What does Angela think?
Oh, well, you know your sister. She doesn't seem to mind awfully. She's more worried about your father.
Yes, so am I. Mm. He seemed all right when I saw him last month, but he wrote to me afterwards and his tone was quite grave.
Look, this blood clot of his, apparently it might become serious at any moment.
They say there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, well, Angela's at Matchett now. Thought she should be on hand in case anything, you know, happened. Mm. Well, I'd better get back to the house.
Well, give her my love.
Yes, will do.
Guy went through to the bar, where Ian Kilbannock was regaling an elderly grenadier with his Sword of Stalingrad story.
This set the royal mind brooding, and the result is that thing everyone's queuing to see at the Abbey. Will you excuse me? Guy!
Hello, Ian.
Who do you think just turned me out of my house? Virginia.
How is she?
On the rocks.
Oh, dear.
Mm. I've left her having a heart-to-heart with Kirsty. Are you going to Everard Spruce's?
I haven't been invited.
He's sure to have champagne. This stuff's awful, and they've put the prices up. Still, may as well finish it. Glass for Captain Crouchback. Do you read Spruce's magazine?
Survival? No.
Nor do I, but it's highly thought of. Winston reads it.
I don't believe you.
Well, perhaps not personally, but a copy goes to the cabinet offices. Cheers, Guy.
Cheers. Oh, do you think Spruce will have champagne?
Sure to. He enjoys official backing, and tonight he's got two distinguished foreigners to impress.
Oh.
How about we wash this down with a couple of brandies, then go over there?
Why not?
It's pleasant to get into a completely civilian circle once in a while.
I mean, what's happened to everyone, Kirsty? London used to be full of chums. Now I don't seem to know anyone.
It's the war.
Do you realise that since my brother was killed, I haven't a single living relative?
Darling, I'm sorry. I hadn't heard.
Yes, 3 years ago.
In fact, I didn't know you had a brother.
Tim. 5 years younger than me. We never got on. I mean, you've got hundreds of children and parents and cousins. You can't imagine what it feels like to be quite alone.
What about your stepmother?
She never approved of me. Anyway, she's in Switzerland, so I can't get to her if I wanted to. I'm scared, Kirsty.
Of what?
Money. I've never known what it's like to have no money. I mean, it's a very odd sensation indeed. Tim made a will leaving all he had to some girl. Papa never left me anything, and he thought I was well provided for.
What about Mr. Troy? Surely he'll have to cough up eventually.
Well, that's what my bank manager and lawyer said. They wrote him a lot of letters, polite at first, and then firm, and then threatening. Finally, about 6 months ago, they hired a lawyer in New York to serve a writ. A fine move that turned out to be.
Why?
Mr. Troy has divorced me.
Surely he can't do that.
He's done it. Yeah, signed and sealed. Apparently he's had a man watching me and taking affidavits.
How absolutely disgusting.
Well, it's just like Mr. Troy. We've sent copies of the evidence in case there's any sort of appeal, but it doesn't seem likely. Well, I haven't been strictly faithful to Mr. Troy all this time.
Oh, he could hardly expect that.
No. Well, so, no alimony, an overdraft, and a huge lawyer's bill.
What will you do?
I've done the only thing I could do. Sold the jewels. The beasts gave me half what they cost. Said no one's buying at the moment.
Yes, I've heard that.
And then this morning a very awkward thing happened. One of the things I sold, a pair of clips, well, I thought I'd lost them years ago till they turned up in an old bag.
Well, why is that awkward?
I'd forgotten that when I lost them I'd reported them to the insurance company and been paid. Apparently I've committed some sort of criminal offence.
Virginia!
No, well, they've been fairly decent about it. They aren't going to the police or anything, but I've got to refund the money.
How much?
£250. It doesn't sound much, but I haven't got it. I've been hawking furs around this afternoon, but they said no one's buying them either. I mean, I'd have thought they're just what everyone would want with winter coming on and no coal.
Well, I've always envied your furs.
Yours for £250.
What's the best offer you've got?
Believe it or not, £75.
I happen to have a little money in the bank at the moment. I could go a bit higher than that.
Well, I need three times as much.
You must have some other things left.
All I possess in the world is in that suitcase.
Well, let's go through it. I'm sure we can find enough to make up £250.
Oh, Kirsty, you are a comfort to a girl.
Everard Spruce was in his middle 30s. Time was he cultivated a proletarian youthful aspect. Now, perhaps without design, he looked older than his years and presented the negligent elegance of a fashionable don.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Ian Kilbannock. Everard invited me and my wife, but as she's unavailable, I have brought Captain Crouchback of the Halberdiers.
I was promised champagne.
I don't know anything about champagne. The party's Lily Elver.
It'd be rude not to say hello.
I'll tell Everard you're here.
The barefoot secretary went in search of her employer. Spruce wore a heavily striped silk shirt and bow tie, above non-committal trousers. Secreted in a distant corner, he was in rapt conversation with a uniformed young man whose wartime reflections Spruce was keen to publish.
It's fascinating.
Corporal Major Ludovic was just as keen to see his pensée in print.
Yes. There are particular observations in your book which I thought, if I may say so, extremely acute and funny.
Good.
Tell me, are they in any case libelous?
No.
And there seem to be two poetic themes which occurred again and again. The drowned sailor motif, I took to be an echo of The Wasteland. Had you Eliot consciously in mind?
I don't think he was called Eliot.
Then there was the cave image. Oh, you must have read a lot of Freudian psychology.
There's nothing psychological about the cave.
Perhaps a spontaneous liberation of the unconscious. Now, I am very keen to publish your work.
Good.
My one reservation is that I'm not entirely smitten with the title.
You don't like Pensée?
Well, it feels a little dead. A little 17th century. Brings to mind Pascal. But you are an artist. I'm sure you'll come up with something better. How about Notes in Transit or something like that?
Never. Sorry to interrupt. There are two men in uniform.
Oh, good heavens! Not the police.
One might be. He's wearing an odd sort of blue uniform. The other's an airman. They're asking for champagne.
You haven't given them any.
Oh, no.
I'd better go and see who they are. Stay here and talk to Mr. Ludovic.
All right.
I hope he has got champagne. These women all look a bit intense.
Yeah.
Everard!
Oh, it's you, Ian. You were described by rank alone.
I'm afraid we're a little late. I bought Guy, you remember him.
Hello.
Yes, I'm sure we met somewhere. The thing is, everything's over here. I was just having a few words with a very interesting new writer. We particularly welcome contributions from servicemen. Remind me, Guy, do you write?
No.
Oh, no.
Good God! Ludovic!
That's the man I was speaking of. Do you know him?
He saved my life, and I've never had a chance to thank him.
Well, do so now, but don't take him away. We were in the middle of a fascinating conversation.
Promised the lure of alcohol, Ian left with an old acquaintance, while Guy crossed the room and held out a hand. Ludovic raised his oyster eyes with an expression of unmitigated horror.
Ludovic! Well, surely you remember me. Crouchback. Hook Force. Crete.
Yes.
I've been hoping to run into you again. There's so much to say. They told me you saved my life.
Well,
you don't seem pleased to see me.
It's the shock. You, of all people, here, of all places.
Yes, I suppose. But, look, my memory's awfully vague about those last days in Crete and the boat.
Some things happen that are best forgotten.
Oh, come on, aren't you overdoing the modest hero? What happened to Major Hound?
I understand he was reported missing.
Prisoner?
Forgive me, Crouchback, I'm not in military records.
No. Look, I'd very much like to thank you properly. Are you doing anything for dinner?
And without an apology or a word of farewell to Guy or Spruce, Ludovic made precipitately for the stairs, the front door, and the sheltering blackout.
What on earth happened to him? What did you say to him?
Nothing. I merely asked him about old times.
You knew him well?
Not exactly. We always thought him odd.
He has talent. Perhaps a hint of genius. Oh, it's most annoying him disappearing like that.
Virginia Troy had not been in his house 10 days before Ian Kilbannock began to ask,
"When is she going?"
"I don't mind having her around. She's not costing as much."
"She isn't contributing anything either."
"She was awfully decent to us when she was rich."
"That's a long time ago. I've had Trimmer shipped to America, for God's sake. I just don't understand why she has to stay here."
I might suggest she gives us a little something, just to pay her way.
Unbelievable!
If this is a heart-to-heart, I'll leave you to it.
No, stay, Ian, you should hear this. I've just come from my lawyers. They've got a copy of Mr. Troy's divorce evidence. Who do you think collected it for him?
Who?
Three guesses.
Well, I can't think of anyone.
Nope.
That disgusting Lute.
No.
It's not possible.
Apparently, Lieutenant Padfield is a member of a firm who work for Mr. Troy and does odd jobs for them in his spare time.
What a swine.
After we've all been so kind to him. Are you going to give him away?
I don't know.
People ought to be warned.
Well, it's our own fault for taking him up. He always gave me the creeps.
It destroys one's faith in human nature.
Well, the Lute isn't human. He just made a change from Trimmer.
Don't you miss him at all?
Ian, I can safely say that every morning for the last 4 days I've woken up to the thought, Trimmer's gone, with pure joy and relief.
Well, I've got to get over to HQ. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help you with the Lute.
Oh, thanks, Ian. You're a darling.
Now Trimmer's gone, I suppose you'll be looking for somewhere else to live?
Well, not unless you want to get rid of me.
Oh, no.
No.
Right, well, see you later.
Have you got a family doctor?
Oh, we always go to an old boy in Sloane Street. I can give you his address.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've sometimes been to a little man in Newport Street for sleeping pills.
It's here somewhere.
There was that ghastly Englishman in Venice who patched me up that time I fell downstairs at the Palazzo Corombona. But for some reason, I've never really had one I can call my doctor.
Here it is. Dr. Puttock.
What an extraordinary name. Thanks. Yes, I think I'll make an appointment.
Not ill?
No, I just feel I ought to have what Mr. Troy calls a check-up. Is it expensive?
A guinea visit, I think.
Might just afford that.
Talking of money, you know I adore having you here.
Yes, and it's awfully sweet of you taking me in for free.
It's just... Ian was wondering if you wouldn't feel more comfortable if you paid something.
I couldn't be more comfortable as I am, darling. And anyway, I couldn't possibly afford to. You talk him round, Kirsty. You know, explain to him that I'm broke.
Oh, he knows that.
No, really broke. That's what no one understands. Oh. I mean, I talk to him myself, only I think you'd do it better.
I'll try.
A week after Guy's name popped out of the electronic personnel selector, he received a summons to present himself for an interview at an office described as General Intelligence Liberation of Italy.
In charte, sei commode.
Sorry?
Come in and sit down.
Ah.
I thought you were supposed to speak Italian.
I do.
Looks as though you'll need a refresher. Say something, then.
In Italian?
Yes.
Sono più abituato al dialetto genovese, ma di Saletto riesco a farmi capire dappertutto in Italia, fuori Sicilia.
You're Sicilian?
No. I visited Sicily, then lived for a while on the Ligurian coast. I've travelled widely around the country.
That sounds all right. You wouldn't be much use if you only talked Sicilian. You'll be working the north, probably Venetia.
May I ask what kind of work, sir?
Secret. As you probably know, the advance in Italy is bogged down at the moment, and we don't expect much movement till spring. The Germans have taken over in force. Some of the WOPs seem to be on our side, call themselves Partisani. Pretty left-wing by the sound of them. Nothing wrong with that, of course. You'll be keeping GHQ informed about what they're up to.
Right.
You'll also arrange drops of equipment. You've done commando training, I see. Did that include parachuting?
No, sir.
You'd better take a course. Any objection?
None whatever.
You're a bit old, but you'd be surprised by the age of some of our chaps. Any experience with small boats?
Yes, sir.
Good. That may come in useful. You'll hear from us in due course.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Oh. Your file says you belong to Bellamy's.
Yes.
A lot of loose talk gets reported from there. Keep quiet about this.
Very good, sir.
Arrivederci.
Goodbye.
When Guy returned to the transit camp, he found a telegram waiting from his sister, Angela, announcing that his father had died, suddenly and peacefully, at Matchett.
How's Angela taken it?
Oh, well, you know your sister. Putting a brave face on things. You'll have noticed I'm not wearing a top hat.
There's no need.
Yes. Seemed out of place these days. Well, I don't suppose there'll be many people there.
I really have no idea. Father lived a quiet life these past 10 years or so.
Yeah. Have you brought sandwiches?
No.
Oh. Well, I don't know where we'll get lunch. I hope your Uncle Peregrine and Angela have arranged something at the pub. You know, I always had a great respect for your father.
Arthur was wrong. The church was crowded. Guy wondered how many had come as an act of courtesy and how many were there to pray that a perpetual light should shine upon Mr. Crouchback.
I say, Guy.
Hmm?
They don't expect me to take part, do they? You know, carrying anything. I don't know the drill.
Don't worry, Arthur. This is one time when no one expects anything of you.
Right, right. Well, I'll take my lead from you and Angela.
Mm.
Anxious to avoid liturgical solecism, Boxbender genuflected, sat, knelt, stood and crossed himself with his relations. Guy followed the familiar rite with his thoughts full of his father.
In memoriam aeterna erit justus, abaptitione malam ultime.
The phrase was apt. His father had been a just man, not particularly judicious, not at all judicial, but just in the full sense.
Quantitative judgments don't apply.
A reasoning man, Mr. Crouchback had known that he was honourable, charitable and faithful, a man who should be confident of salvation. To Guy, his father was the best man, the only entirely good man he had ever known. He thanked God for his father, then his thoughts strayed to his own death that had been so near in Crete and might soon be near again in Italy.
I'm worried about you.
His father had been worried not by Guy's worldly progress, but by his evident apathy.
Lord, I don't ask anything from you.
I don't ask anything from you. That was the deadly core of his apathy.
I'm here if you want me. I don't suppose I can be of any use, but if there is anything I can do, let me know.
In the recess of his conscience, there lay the belief that somewhere, somehow, something would be required of him. That he must be attentive to the summons when it came.
Thank you very much for coming.
Not at all. I was very fond of your father.
Thank you. Please accept my sincere condolences. Luke! Nice of you to come. It's a very significant occasion. Yes. I'm coming back to the hall. Are you? The Reverend Mother asked me.
When, how, and why were the questions Guy wanted to ask. Instead, he said...
Right. Yeah. Right, good. Do you know the way?
Surely.
The funeral party walked back along the village street. Opposite the Catholic church was the stucco facade of what the locals called the Lesser House, where his father suggested Guy should end his days. The Crouchback family seat was now a convent school. The mourners were greeted by the Reverend Mother, and the nuns had spread a trestle table with as lavish a repast as the stringency of the times allowed. Guy made a round of the guests with Uncle Peregrine at his side to identify them. Presently, he found himself with a solicitor.
Would this be a good moment? For reading the will?
No, that only happens in Victorian novels, just a general chat. I think your father left his affairs in good order. He chose to live quietly, but he was by no means badly off, you know.
I didn't.
Oh, yes. He sold the estate at a bad time, but he invested wisely and he never touched the capital. Naturally, death duties will have to be paid, but there will be a considerable residue to be shared between you and your sister.
Have you spoken to Angela?
Not yet, but the total income is in the neighbourhood of 7,000.
What? That much?
Hello, Cyphers.
Kirsty, I've got to see you.
It's a bit difficult at the moment.
I'm in trouble.
Oh, Virginia, not again. I thought you'd paid the insurance company.
Not that sort of trouble. I've been to see Dr. Puttock.
Ah. All right. Meet me at Lyons Corner House at 1.
I can't tell you how awful it was.
And he's absolutely certain.
Apparently the test's infallible. And when I told him I hadn't seen my husband for 4 years, he said there's not so much stigma attached to bastardy in wartime.
Oh, darling.
What am I going to do?
Please don't take this the wrong way, but do you know who the father is?
Of course I do. He's just gone to America.
Trimmer.
Oh, and when I asked the doctor to do something about it, I was promptly shown the door. Oh, this damned war.
Would you like me to talk to him myself?
Would you, darling?
He's been the family doctor for years. He dotes on me. I'll explain the situation and tell you what he says.
Kirsty?
Don't worry. Ian's going straight from work to Bellamy's.
Did you see the doctor?
Yes.
And?
Well, we better both have a drink.
Bad news?
Gin?
Oh, what did he say, Kirsty? Will he do it?
No.
Oh.
In fact, he was frightfully pompous. I've never known him like it before. Cheers. He lectured me on professional ethics and asked if I'd go to my bank manager and suggest he embezzle money for me. I said I would if I thought there was any chance he'd do it. At least that softened him a bit. And eventually he gave me a name and an address.
Oh!
He doesn't know if the man's still practising. He wouldn't even write it himself. Made me do it after he'd cut his address off the top of the paper. Oh, he had me so nervous I could hardly write. Anyway, here it is.
Oh, thank you, darling. Brook Street. I thought Paddington or Soho.
He said you better take £100 with you in notes.
Well, £100 will have to wait. I'm going round there now. You wouldn't like to come?
No. Well, the whole thing's given me the creeps.
Virginia took the tube to Bond Street and picked her way through American soldiers to the once fashionable address. But when she reached the place where the house should have stood, she found a bomb crater, flanked on either side with rugged cliffs of brick and plaster.
Hello, Mrs. Troy.
Virginia almost turned to walk away, then thought better of it. Now was not the time to cut people, even people like Lieutenant Padfield.
Hello, Lute. Will you buy a girl a drink?
Just what I was about to suggest.
Cheers.
Absent friends.
I'm afraid it'll just be the one. Ruby's expecting me at the Dorchester.
Oh, he's to go to her parties in Belgrave Square.
She's a very significant and lovely person. Yesterday she was telling me all about Lord Curzon and Eleanor Glynn and their interest in the occult. It's not a thing that's ever greatly interested me.
No.
Well, I'm interested in live people, mostly. Some days back I was at a Catholic requiem in Somerset County. And it was the live people I found significant. And there were a lot of them. It was Mr. Gervase Crouchback's funeral at Broome.
Oh, yes, I saw he died. Well, it's years since we met.
A lovely person.
Surely you never knew him.
Only by repute. And he was reputed as very fine indeed.
I was fond of him once.
I was glad to learn that he was so well off.
Oh, no, no, not Mr. Crouchback. No, you've got that wrong. He was ruined long ago.
Well, from what I hear, he wasn't ever ruined. It was just the way things were over here after the First War. Real estate didn't produce any income and ran at a loss. When Mr. Crouchback sold up, he not only got a price for the land, he saved himself all he'd been paying on the upkeep. So when he cleared out, he ended up a very substantial person.
Well... What a lot you know about everyone, Lute.
I've been told I'm funny that way.
I know all about you and my divorce.
Mr. Troy is an old and valued client of my firm.
There was nothing personal about it. Business before friendship.
You still look on me as a friend.
Surely.
Then go and find a taxi.
Next morning, Kirsty's charwoman came up trumps and passed on the details of a Dr. Akonanga practising out of the Edgware Road.
Yes?
Do you know if Dr. Akonanga's at home?
He's gone.
Oh, dear.
Been gone nearly a year. The government took him.
Oh, you mean he's in prison?
No, not him. Work of national importance. He's a clever one. He left his card in case anyone asked. There you are.
Dr. Akonanga, nature therapist and deep psychologist, has temporarily discontinued his practice. Parcels and messages to Brook Street.
Gone up in the world.
The large house was two doors from the bombed one she'd tried to visit the evening before, and was now under military occupation. But once again, Virginia was thwarted. In a room containing a statue of the Sacred Heart, a decapitated cock, and a human skull, Dr. Akonanga explained that he was now in government service and no longer in the business of getting rid of babies. This was the man who HQ had employed to give von Ribbentrop bad dreams and cast spells on the German high command. What dreams troubled Ribbentrop that night, Virginia could not know. She dreamed she was extended on a table, pinioned, headless, and covered with blood-streaked feathers, while a voice within her, from the womb itself, kept repeating, "You, you, you." Night and day, you
are the one. In Sword of Honor, Episode 5, Unconditional Surrender, Guy was played by Paul Reddy, Virginia by Lydia Leonard, Kirsty by Polly Frame, and Ian Kilbannock by Oliver Chris. Arthur Boxbender was Robert Dawes, Ludovic, Carl Prekop, Julia Stitch, Christine Kavanagh, Tommy, Nicholas Bolton, Colonel Tickeridge, Michael Burtonshaw, Mr. Crouchback, Sean Murray, Lute, David Seddon, Everard Spruce, Harry Jardine, Mr. Oates, Arthur Hughes, The Sapper, John Norton, The Sister, Carolyn Pickles, and the landlady, Carrie Sileri. The narrator was Tim McInerney. Sword of Honor is dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Sally Adens.